we recognize that despite having all of our new therapies in IBD, we're not achieving all the outcomes we want for our patients who have Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. So while we've made progress in having new therapies that are available and approved by the FDA in the United States, the reality is that we have a lot of work to do. And the question becomes, can we improve what we're currently using, or do we need new treatments and need to add to these existing therapies in novel ways? And the answer is probably both, but there's a lot of room for optimization of what we currently have. And I think that's where we can make the most difference right now. We've learned that if you treat earlier in the disease course, this is especially true for Crohn's disease, but I would suggest it's true in ulcerative colitis as well, that you can have substantially better outcomes than what we see in a clinical trial. The phase three trials for Crohn's disease, as an example, when there's drug development programs, usually enroll patients who have 7 to 10 years of history of their disease and may have already been on multiple therapies before they get into the trial. So when you see results of a clinical trial that suggests we have a 25% remission rate, which can be sobering and depressing, frankly, it's much different than if we look at a trial that is exploring a different strategy, which is to take someone who's been just diagnosed and acknowledge that they have moderate to severe disease and treat them right away. And that may sound obvious, but when you're in the trenches taking care of patients, a lot of people have started with conventional therapies or even therapies that are not effective or recommended and working their way up to a therapy that we know works better. One of the most significant messages we have, and a message that was in my lecture at DDW here, is treat early. Don't be shy. When that patient is diagnosed, you need to acknowledge the severity of their disease and get them on therapy. And we've learned that we can achieve 80% remission rates in Crohn's disease when we treat earlier. That's a very different story than what we see at the end of clinical trials. And it also tells us that there's room for so much improvement with what we already have. And I suggested in my lecture at this meeting that although the data are predominantly with infliximab, it's probably any therapy that we use. If you use it early, the likelihood of having reversible disease and gaining control is much higher. And then it leads us to have new questions. We get people under control right away. Can you later de-escalate? And that is a hypothesis which we talked about during the panel discussion after the lecture. When considering somebody who is not responding to therapy or who is maybe responding or even in remission but lost response, there is a role for using therapeutic drug monitoring or serum concentration assessments. But the data only support doing it in anti-TNF currently. Although it makes sense to think that if there's no drug present with any of our monoclonal antibodies where you can measure levels, it obviously is not there to do its job any longer. The data we have on reactive serum concentration assessments and proactive dose optimization is really only with anti-TNF and predominantly with infliximab. So I do think there's a role for that in those patients. But otherwise, the message is if somebody's losing response to an IL-23 inhibitor or to ustekinumab or to vedolizumab, you should acknowledge that you can decrease the interval, perhaps increase the dose if you can get it, give it three tries, meaning three cycles of that new dose or that new interval. And if you recapture, great. And if you don't, it's time to move on. And if you can't get the dose escalation these days, that's probably okay as well because we have so many options. Switching mechanisms is going to be more effective than trying to cycle within class. So in other words, if you're losing response to one IL-23 inhibitor, it's probably better to just go to something completely different, like one of our small molecules, like the JAK inhibitor S1P receptor modulators, or a different monoclonal antibody strategy. So I think that we've learned a lot here, but therapeutic drug monitoring is really still only for TNF inhibitors. When I was presenting this lecture to the audience, I emphasized that when you're assessing somebody who is not responding to therapy, the first question you have to make sure you understand is the patient inflamed? Some people have symptoms and they're no longer inflamed. And then we have to think about, is this related to some other phenomenon? Is it a stricture? Is it bacterial overgrowth? Is it a bile salt diarrhea? Is it a motility issue or supplements they're taking related to medications. If it's inflamed, the next question is, are they infected? So remember, patients with IBD can have Clostridioides infection. They can have the infections that anybody gets walking through the world. And we need to make sure we understand if that's going on. Then the third question is, where's the drug? And what I mean by that is the patient able to take it? Are they taking it? Were they able to get it from insurance or whomever is paying and providing it? And if they're taking it, is it clearing too fast or is there a delivery issue? So for example, patients with rapid transit or who have an ileostomy or a J pouch, extended release formulation like upadacitinib, which is our small molecule JAK inhibitor, may pass too fast to deliver. A patient who has high inflammatory burden and a low serum albumin may be leaking protein. Monoclonal antibodies may have increased clearance because of that. And so asking where is the drug addresses all those other issues. And then you make a decision. The drug's present, the patient's taking it, they're still feeling somewhat better, you've made progress, try to optimize. Maybe even add another therapy to that. Don't give up on that mechanism. But when it's not working at all and they're not infected, they're definitely inflamed, switch classes. And I also emphasized in my lecture that it might include surgery. And we shouldn't leave that to the end. It's important to gain control with surgery in some patients. We have a number of different lines of evidence that tell us that it's common for patients to not receive optimal dosing. And that sometimes is because the provider, the clinician, doesn't use the induction dosing and they go right to maintenance. Now, this is more common when we have an induction strategy that's intravenous and then a maintenance strategy that's subcutaneous in the United States that requires two different authorization processes. So I understand why for some people, either they can't get both or they just move right to maintenance. So one of the pitfalls is that people don't induce. They don't use the induction doses and they're going right to maintenance and you're not going to gain control of a hot inflammatory bowel if you don't induce properly. Another pitfall is that we don't proactively monitor the disease. This comes into different classifications. It can be assessing the patient just clinically. How are you doing? Do you have breakthrough of your symptoms in between doses to suggest that they're not under good control? Remembering that a patient who gets a course of steroids more than once in a year is probably not in stable, deep remission. And then the next point of this is when you are assessing them objectively, that means with calprotectin, CRP, intestinal ultrasound, or endoscopy, remembering that we're not doing this only when the patient's sick, but we should be doing it more proactively. And that gets to this treat-to-target strategy. Can we plan proactively to reassess? And then we need to act on it. And we have to understand that perfection in treat-to-target is not the goal. Quality of life is the goal. And so optimizing our therapies doesn't mean getting everyone to be perfect. It means getting people to be improved enough that we have stabilized their disease process. And ultimately what we want is to change the outcomes. But we need to do this in a proactive way. And that's a pearl, but it's also a pitfall people have had where they didn't do it. Too much of IBD management is reactive or even crisis care still. And we need to be much more proactive. I think that if I were to summarize some main messages for my colleagues, it would be when you diagnose a patient with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis and they have moderately to severely active disease, however that is defined by you, or if you use some of our indices to understand it, treat them with a therapy that works for moderately to severely active disease. Minimize or completely avoid the use of corticosteroids. A majority of patients in our clinical trials, when they go out into maintenance, are not on steroids. And 40 to 60% of patients aren't on corticosteroids during induction in our clinical trials. So the use of steroids in everybody, just as a knee-jerk reaction because we want to do something while we're waiting to get the new therapy, is a mistake. I think we can avoid that. The third point is be proactive in your disease monitoring strategy. That means reassess at a short interval to make sure you're moving in the right direction. And if the patient is doing better, then you decide, do I need to adjust this further so I can get them under even better control? Should I wait a little bit longer? or do I add a second therapy? And when it's clear that this therapy isn't working, this mechanism isn't working, I think the preponderance of evidence and the emerging real-world data combined with what we have available tells us that we're better off switching class of therapy than trying to tweak within one class and cycle back and forth. And if we do all of that, what I concluded in my presentation was that if we have informed clinicians, we have a motivated patient population, we have access to the available therapies, and we optimize those therapies properly, we'll end up with most patients achieving remission with what we already have. And sure, innovations are needed. We still want to find cures. But what we have now, if we do it with the best approach that we've learned, we can do a lot better for many people.